Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
28 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Euling, Collins, Herman, and Sunder are excused from the call. Representative Duncan is excused from 10:30 on.
Our chaplain today is Captain Bradford Russell of the Salvation Army. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Shall we pray? God of the Spirit of all men, we humbly and heartily thank you today for the great hope of eternal life you have given to us through your word. As we unite here today to discuss the concerns and hopes of the residents of this state, may we continually live with the realization that our concerns and hopes are shared by you. Help these men and women not tire in their well-doing, but strengthen them for your work. Help us always to feel compassion and compelled to act on behalf of those who live in poverty, ignorance, or fear. Now may the words of our mouth and the meditation of our heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen.
Representative Jenkins, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objection as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 88th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 88th day in House Supplement number 113.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the journal for the 88th day and House Supplement 113 be approved as certified.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal or the supplement? Hearing no objections, the journal and supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have Representative Maru and I have a guest visiting from Homer. She is an advocate for the Homer Community College, the Homer branch of the Kenai Community College, and she's down here for the Folk Festival, Mary Jane Murphy in Gallery A.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's a couple of folks from the Chugach Eagle River with us today. One of the people is Julie Kraft in Gallery B, who works for Representative Randy Phillips and I in Eagle River. And the other person's a friend of mine, Ron Miner.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, a constituent of mine in Gallery B, Thomas Brooks Jones.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce several constituents of mine in Gallery A. We have Mike and Catherine Stevenson and their son, Ambler, and also another constituent of mine, Brad Brooks, Gallery A.
Representative Frank.
Also in Gallery A is down from Fairbanks, Scott Matthews.
Any further guests for introduction? In Gallery B are two friends of mine from Sitka, Steve Vieira and Mike Shalin. Would you all help me welcome them to Juneau? Last call for guests for introduction. Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
I've received a copy of the Petroleum Production Revenue Forecast Quarterly Report, March 1986, and it is on file in the clerk's office. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
We received from the House Labor and Commerce Committee. They reviewed the qualifications for the following named individuals who have been submitted in nomination by the governor and recommends that they be confirmed. And it's to the Athletic Commission, the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, the Board of Dental Examiners, the Board of Electrical Examiners, the Guide Licensing and Control Board, the Occupational Safety and Health Review Board. The report was signed by the Navarre Chairman, Boucher, Pierce, Collins, Davis, Kopanen, and Hanley. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 182 relating to the disposition of unclaimed property and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 182 Judiciary with a new title, recommends it do pass, attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Taylor, Pettijohn, Phillips, and Clarkson. House Bill 182 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 516 relating to the impeachment of judges of the Court of Appeals and the District Court and to disqualification of judges for cause, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 516 Judiciary with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman. Signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Taylor, Phillips, Clarkson, and Pettijohn. House Bill 516 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 517 relating to the private sale and consignment of works of art, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 517 Judiciary with the same title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Taylor, and Phillips. Having no recommendation, Pettijohn and Clarkson. House Bill 517 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 527 relating to the definition of residency for purposes of the Fish and Game Code, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 527 Resources with the same title, and that it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Taylor, Pettijohn, Phillips, and Clarkson. House Bill 527 has no further referral. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 705, Alaska Research Development Endowment, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 705 Hess with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by the co-chairman, Kopanen and Grunberg. Signing do pass, Kopanen, Grunberg, and Taylor. Signing do not pass, Thompson. Having no recommendation, Hanley. House Bill 705 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered House Bill 596 relating to fishermen's liens and recommends it back as follows with a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Gall, Chairman, signing do pass, Maru, and Jenkins. Having no recommendation, Gall and Hurley. House Bill 596 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Mr. Speaker, we have a citation out of order. It's from the Senate. The Senate has approved and transmitted for consideration a citation honoring Dr. Henry I. Akiyama by Senators Kurtula, Ziegler, Ray, Rody, Ferguson, Sackett, Jaroff, Halford, Vic Fisher, Sturgiluski, Abood, Fahrenkamp, Bennett, and all other members of the Senate, and Representative M.M. Miller. The Senate also approved and sent to enrolling the citation honoring the Diamond High Boys Nordic Ski Team, state champions.
The citation sent to this body for our consideration will be referred to rules for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
Second sponsor substitute for House Bill 181 by Taylor, Sund, and Gall, an act relating to the maintenance of vessels of the Alaska Marine Highway System. The Transportation Committee has considered second sponsor substitute for House Bill 181 and recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute for second sponsor substitute for House Bill 181, Transportation, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Davis, Chairman, signing do pass, Pinal, Berry, Schultz, and Maru. Davis has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for second sponsor substitute for House Bill 181, Finance, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing Dupass, Adams, Ringstead, Larson, Euling, and Duncan. Szymanski signed Dupass, Alaska Jobs, and More Jobs. And signing no recommendation, Porchot, Rieger, Frank. Signing do not pass, Binkley. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having two committee substitutes, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for a sponsor substitute for House Bill 181 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the committee substitute Finance? Hear objections. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our caucus seriously objects to this one because of the dramatic differences between the original bill from the Transportation Committee, which we would all agree upon as putting emphasis on doing maintenance within our own state on our own ships. However, sir, the Finance Committee version really disturbs us in that it kind of undermines, seriously undermines the legislators' effort in this session and the last session to upgrade our Procurement Act, our Procedure Act on bidding and competitive bidding. And if you look at the sections that were added in Finance Committee, the major concern we have is that this particular act will exempt in-state contracts from the provisions of competitive bidding statutes. It exempts them from all statutes, not just the ones that we are considering today. And we find that a weakening of the procedures and the efforts. I think there's at least two bills in the House. There was one that was sent over by the other House of Senate the other day after a lot of legislators, House and Senate, worked all summer, all during the interim, on the bidding procedures and competition in here that would help save Alaska monies. We're all interested in jobs, and that's the reason why the transportation bill is acceptable to us. We're also wondering if we're not getting into constitutional problems when we speak of legislation that will only benefit a specific section of our state. And in this case here, we certainly want to help out Seward and Ketchikan, where we have put in extensive capital financing to help these communities to have a stable base of employment and an economic structure, and surely we want to keep the money in the state as much as possible. However, if you extend this concept to other specific services that the state needs, should we then not do it with timber? Should we then not do it to printing? All printing will go in the state. Should we not extend it to almost anything that the state does and we have the abilities to do it here? So unless you want to completely change your legislation that we have worked on in procedures of competitive bidding and in saving the state money, there is no doubt in some cases state money will be saved, perhaps in sending a vessel out of state. I'm also concerned, Mr. Speaker, in the broad concept that lest the commissioner of DOTPF make the decision regarding maintenance in state on all vessels. We know that our state troopers have their own vessels. The Fish and Game have their own vessels. University of Alaska has their own vessels. So will we be compounding the problems of the procedures used for maintenance? I'm not sure that all of them send their ships to the lower 48s now, but they probably have the procedures now that is efficient for their own services. Now, if we make the commissioner of DOT responsible, would not that impact the procedures and duplicate responsibilities and so on? And finally, Mr. Speaker, I think by accepting the transportation bill, which is, looks pretty clean and simple and to the point, it may save us all a lot of paperwork and trouble and more meetings, because there's no doubt, Mr. Speaker, these same things will be brought up in the Senate side and perhaps discussed and changed, and then we'll end up with a conference committee, and with the shortage of time upon us now, it may be best to send what we all can agree with, the transportation bill. Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Finance Committee, I worked as subcommittee chairman on developing the alternative with the representative from Prince William Sound area, the representative of the area of Seward. She and I worked very closely on this legislation, and I appreciate what the minority leader brought out, and it was because of those concerns that we drafted this legislation. Specifically, to use one example, University of Alaska boat was in Seward. It was driven all the way to Seattle when it could have just gone across the bay to be serviced. In that case, in excess of $50,000 would be expended in fuel alone just to run the ship down to Seattle for servicing. And that's one of the reasons which we've looked at doing is expanding it to all marine vessels to cover fish and game, to cover the University of Alaska, and then to go in and recognize the fact that we have made substantial contribution to both the Seward facility and the Ketchikan facility to the tune of over $77 million in state funding to develop an infrastructure in the state of Alaska to maintain vessels. In southeastern Alaska, the Ketchikan facility is now able and available to maintain our fleet. The state of Washington maintains one of the largest ferry fleets in the United States, and it doesn't allow the state of Oregon, its neighbor, to compete on the repairs. Quite frankly, it gets down to that simple rule: you don't want somebody else eating out of your lunchbox. And that's where we're at today. I think it's a good positive step. It's going to mean a lot of jobs for the people of Alaska to see our facility in Alaska being used, and at a cost savings to the state of Alaska. It costs a lot of money to transport our ferries to Seattle and have them maintained. I take exception to the minority leader's objection and would hope that the body seriously look at adopting this, because it really does mean jobs and more jobs to the people of Alaska. And that's the reason I worked long and hard with the other members of the Finance Committee to make a good, meaningful piece of legislation.
Representative Taylor.
Here on many people's minds today, and it would certainly be on my mind had I not had the opportunity to go through all the hearings and listen to all the testimony that was involved in the creation of this legislation, and that is, how does this affect the bidding process? Will this be detrimental to our state? Will this be a cost item that we will see in the future? I'd like to answer each of those if I can by reminding the body that 25 years ago, and every year since then, this legislature has taken a hard look at certain industries in our state. And whether or not we as a governmental body should assist those industries in developing that infrastructure that they needed to build a wholesome private economy. In our budget this year, there'll be $8 million for tourism. In addition to that, there'll be several million dollars for the assistance to the salmon industry in the marketing of their products. And I think we're all very proud of the work that ASME has done. Some might call us socialist for that type of a involvement in the private sector. I'm proud to say I support that kind of concept in building private industry, because one of these days they will take over completely and will no longer need any support. This privatization is a goal that I think we should look to in many other areas, because in the long run it will save our state money. The bottom paragraph on page 1, beginning at line 24, refers to Title 3705-230. That provision allows Alaska businesses to receive a 5% bidder preference over any competition outside of the state. That competition, that bidder preference, is eliminated by this legislation, so that in future years, those facilities, be they in Seward or Ketchikan, would not have that advantage. And as a consequence, this is a two-edged sword. Up front, the advantage may very well be given by the commissioner in his discretion to the in-state facilities, because now the commissioner can no longer look at just the bottom line. He has to look at the same things that each of you looked at when you made decisions over the last few years about whether or not to build these facilities in Seward and in Ketchikan. The state has over $77 million invested in two of the most beautiful parking lots you ever saw. And that's all they are today, is parking lots. And without legislation of this type, they may very well remain just large gravel parking lots. Because we need to emphasize the fact that our vessels, which have millions of dollars worth of work done on them each year, have to be repaired in this state. And the commissioner will do that for us when he applies those three standards that are outlined in the legislation beginning on line 17. The commissioner will have to look at the amount of money we as a state have pumped into this facility to build it, and what effect it's going to have upon the amortization, the overhead, and the startup costs of the facilities that have been built by this state. And then he's going to have to look at the direct and indirect benefits. And in so doing, he's got to take into consideration the economies of those two communities and of this state. And then if he can make the decision that the vessel still should be repaired outside of state, he can go ahead and do so. But it allows him to exercise that good common sense that we would hope that every commissioner would utilize, and not just be locked into a bottom line figure. Because it's easy for all of us to understand, I believe, that this will be a competitive field. And wouldn't it be very simple if you were a major repair facility in Seattle or Portland, Oregon, to underbid the state of Alaska's facilities for a year or so, and that's all it would take, and you would totally destroy any startup of this business ever occurring in Alaska. And if someone tried to put the facility in again 5 years later, all you'd have to do would be undercut them for a year or so, and you'd have it wiped out. And so as a consequence, I think we need to look and act more as though we are the private owners of a private facility, and to handle the contracting in that business-like fashion and allow that discretion to the commissioner. If, in fact, we find that over the next 2 or 3 years that these contracts for maintenance are running at too high a level and that our commissioner is, so to speak, giving away the farm in these contracts, this body can respond very promptly to reinstitute the type of regulation that you may desire to prevent that type of gouging from occurring. I don't believe it's going to occur. Once these facilities are on site, there will be competition. There will be an aggressive and active commissioner looking over those costs, and he will be having to report to you as the monitoring body. So I ask your support in this legislation, as I believe it's beneficial to all of us in the state of Alaska.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the original version of the bill as heard by the Transportation Commission. Mr. Speaker, in my opinion, under the leadership of the able chairman of the Transportation Commission, Transportation Committee, that is, the committee did its work in reviewing the original legislation. Mr. Speaker, in my opinion, the advantages of the original bill is that we needed to assure two things. The first is to assure that the work was done in the state of Alaska, and the bill very ably, very simply, does say that the commissioner, that the work is to be done in the state of Alaska. If the commissioner can determine that a facility is able and available in the state, very simple, no red tape with that. The second benefit of that piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, is that it assures that the work is done at a reasonable price by setting the competitive nature in there. Now, to my knowledge, as I understand from floor debate this morning, we've invested some $77 million in facilities in the state. And I would assume that investment went into two facilities, one in Seward and one in Ketchikan. Well, Mr. Speaker, what this does, indeed, is set it some internal competition to assure that the state gets the best price. The original version of the bill does that, and that's one of the reasons I think we should support it. Now, Mr. Speaker, we've heard that the competitive bid data in the original bill gives an Alaskan bidder a 5% preference. He's ahead of the game by 5%. Therefore, with the cost elements in the state of Alaska plus that 5%, it escapes me as to how a facility in the state of Washington, in Seattle, can outbid an Alaskan vendor. Conversely, Mr. Speaker, the bill has passed out under the leadership of the representative from Potter's Flats, has two flaws to it. The first flaw, Mr. Speaker, it speaks of at a price that is in the best interest of the state. That's a blank check. DOTPF, in my opinion, does not have the track record in scrutinizing costs in order to give them this type of a blank check. That is one of the major flaws in the legislation, Mr. Speaker. The second, it takes away the competitive bid. Well, Mr. Speaker, you take that away, and then perhaps that vendor in Seattle cannot bid the Alaskan vendor. And for those reasons, Mr. Speaker, I would encourage this body to support the original version of this legislation. It's simple. It's unencumbered, and it is designed to do the job.
Any further debate on the motion? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt the committee substitute finance? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Could the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
25 yeas, 11 nays.
Committee substitute finance has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 1 by Martin to page 1, line 24. Delete subsection B in its entirety.
Representative Martin. Would the House come back to order? Before the recess, the clerk had just made reference to amendment number 1. The amendment has not been moved. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number 1, ask unanimous support.
Hearing objections, the representative may have some. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have brought out a few in the opening remarks by both sides on this particular bill, but now specifically I'm going to talk about subsection B. The gentleman from Ketchikan brought out some interesting points. First, that we have made a tremendous investment into infrastructure, and I remember those days, and I supported that. Yes, we want infrastructure throughout this state to help Alaska to become self-dependent. Very much so, I believe in that. And perhaps later we'll have a discussion between capital and operating budget on that same point. But right now, it has proven that when we invest in the state, it is better for our people. We will be able to put a lot of people to work. But at what point do we want to say that leaving Alaska's money in Alaska only is best for Alaska? We can go to extremes, and that's the reason why I'm worried about this. The state, in many different avenues of its competitive bidding, the local community governors, governments, in many aspects of competitive business, have found it wise to ask for bids out of state, whether we liked it or not. And I think the citizens have found it wise, too, because, for one, we did not have some of the services or the materials available in state. But as we build up our services, we still want them to be competitive. The bill that we have in one of the bodies, I forget which one now, allows a 10% preference through state bidding, and that's good. But at the same time, with these two facilities in Seward and Ketchikan, they have a major advantage, and that is no capital overhead for a while. We gave them, those communities, that as a gift. The question is then, as the man from Ketchikan brought up, why is not the commissioner using the facilities available? Why is that UAA or UA is not using the Seward facilities? It does sound ridiculous going all the way to Seattle to have the university ship done there and held up there for 3 or 4 months in the other state. I think that it probably would have been better for both committees to ask the university, what savings, for what reason do you choose to go to Seattle? If the local areas, in this case Seward, bid is so outrageous, then perhaps the city of Seward or that business there ought to be looking into the problem. Why is your cost so much higher? You got the infrastructure free, you got a 5% preference, you're saving on the transportation of personnel on the ship back and forth. Why cannot you give a bid within the 5% margin? And now it's going to be a 10% margin. By deleting subsection B, I think that we're going to make the departments responsible. This one here, they have no responsibility. With it saying you must give it to one of these facilities under any circumstances, no strings attached, Seward or Ketchikan could charge maybe 50% more, 60% more than what the competition out of state might have been. And that becomes irresponsible. And then the commissioner will say, hey, you legislators did it. I'm sorry, this is an outrageous cost on redoing this ship, refurbishing it, but I have my hands tied. And at the same time, monies are dropping down. I'm going to have to put all my capital investment and maintenance into that ship rather than like at the university, rather than in school repairs and maintenance of heat. They are forced to contract with Seward, and Seward says, we got a monopoly and we don't care. We want out of it what we can get out of it. We've starved long enough. That's not right. I think we as legislators have to give guidance to the department, to the commissioners, and let them know, yes, these are your limits. Within the new bill that says 10%, it's even more generous. So I ask the body to become responsible. We do want local hire, but we want it at a reasonable price. Thank you.
I'd like to remind the body in about 5 minutes we'll be recessing for the state of the judiciary. We are under debate on amendment number one. Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, on the amendment of which I believe my colleague in front of me strayed to some extent, in speaking about a proposed bill which is not before us, I would like to explain the situation about the university ship. The facility at Seward was not asked to bid on that ship. It was an automatic thing by the university that they sent it to Seattle. Had the facility been there, I'm sure the university would have seen that it was could be repaired far more readily where it was. What we need to do is to, and we're all talking about budget cuts and everything else, if we are going to build the growth of the state of Alaska, if we're going to diversify within the state, if we're going to put money into projects, particularly the tremendous amount of money that's been put in these, I think then that we're going to have to support those projects. I feel that many of the shipyards outside already have their amortization, that they can still bid competitively with our facilities in state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gull, or excuse me, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we're going to be faced with a number of difficult decisions down here, and I have one that I've faced today. I'm going to support the minority leader's amendment on this. I think there's some problems with this amendment, and if you take a look at 3705230, I think there are some important provisions in here that says that Alaska bidder should have a current business license in Alaska. They should have maintain a place of business, that the ventures or the joint ventures should be all be qualified within this provision. So I think it's important to keep this provision on the books, and to delete this I think would be a mistake. So I'm going to support the minority leader in his amendment.
I think I'm going to ask the majority leader now for a motion to recess so we can go into our joint session. We will keep the amendments before us when we come back after into session after the joint session. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, you want a motion to recess till immediately following the joint session?
That's correct.
Move and ask unanimous consent. The
we want to recess.
Yeah,
recess for the purpose of a joint session.
Right. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess, period.
Will the members of the 14th legislative body please come to order? In accordance with the uniform rules, during a joint session, the presiding officer is the President of the Senate. President Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The joint session will please come to order. The purpose of the joint session is the State of the Judiciary Address by the Honorable Jay Rabinowitz, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and that all members of the Senate be shown as present.
Without objection, so ordered. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent the roll call of the House be waived and that all members be shown as present.
Without objection, so ordered. Representative Grunberg and Senator Rohde escort the Chief Justice for Benevis to the joint session. J. Rabinowitz, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, legislators, fellow Alaskans, good morning. This is the fifteenth occasion, that in response to your concurrent resolution, a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alaska has had the privilege to spend a few minutes with you and to report to you and to the people of Alaska on the state of our judiciary. And we do appreciate this opportunity. A bit of history first, and external events, because they weigh heavy on my mind, and it's certainly reflective of the debates that I read about that this body is engaged in. In 1066, the Duke of Normandy looked up in the sky and his troops, and he saw this comet. It was Halley's Comet. And he thought it was a good omen. Across the channel, the English king had just gone through a very arduous and quick march down from York, where he fought off a diversionary tactic of the Duke of Normandy, that is, he used the Scandinavians to attack. And the English troops looked at Halley's Comet, and they were disheartened. Well, I don't think really this is the year of Halley's Comet, but there's a more important external event which is coloring our thinking and
bringing about some realistic, hard thinking by this body, by our administrative director, by my colleagues, who I'll introduce at the end of this address, and by the court system in general. And that is the amazingly sharp decline in the price of oil and the impact this has had on energy-producing states and on Alaska and on the rest of this country. And it's fascinating, the debate between the so-called experts. It's almost reflective of the competing armies looking at Halley's Comet. You can have, and I've just read in the last 3 days, a distinguished economist from Harvard who's of the opinion that oil should drop to $2 or $3 a barrel and it should shut down completely domestic oil production, and his name is Jorgensen of Harvard College, so that those engaged in domestic oil production could go to more productive undertakings without a thought of the nation's security, the drastic dislocations this would have for the nation's economy, and the impact it would have on our banking system in this country. Well, it is against this background that I come to you as chief spokesman of the Alaska Supreme Court and the Alaska court system, fully cognizant of the extraordinarily difficult situations you have to make in regard to the allocation of Alaska's shrinking revenues. And I come to you and I think that we have a special cause, and to plead a special case, and to urge you, when you're thinking about cuts, not to go too far that would deprive Alaskans of the judicial system they're entitled to under our Constitution. But more of that later. I think if you historically look over the budgets, and your respective budget committees can discuss this with the full houses, I think you'll come to the conclusion that we have been accurate and candid in the assessment of our needs. We are operating at present on a $38,800,000 budget. Now, with that budget, an Alaska court system comprised of 600 employees and less than 60 judges, although we do have 60 magistrates included also, we have to meet an ever-rising caseload. And our caseload at present is 165,000 cases annually. Of these, a full 22,000 go into our major trial court, and that is the Superior Court. And the days of the fender bender, the 1- and 2-day automobile trial, that is not the norm any longer in our civil litigation. Even in our criminal litigation, as you see the Peel trial in Southeastern and the various McKay trials, they are becoming more complex. Litigation is taking longer and is becoming more complex. We are getting more mega cases, which are taking more of the judicial resources. Well, are we keeping up with this rising caseload with, I think, these honest budgets, budget requests that we've submitted to you? The news is good to you in the legislature and to fellow Alaskans. The disposition rates at both the district court and the superior courts have improved dramatically in the last year. What does this mean to you? It means that using the available resources, we are keeping up with the explosion in litigation in this state. Now, in light of what we perceive as real, dramatic declines in the revenues that are going to be available to the court system, Are we passive, or are we undertaking measures that, in good faith, are attempting to meet what's happening in the state? Well, administratively, since December, we have put a ban on any new hire. We have curtailed travel. We have curtailed attendance at judicial conferences and judicial educational meetings. We are constantly seeking ways to save the state money. Excuse me, just a minute. And one of the methods that we've employed and have studied recently is the closed-circuit TV arraignment of defendants. This has been carried on in Fairbanks. The Judicial Council carried out a study and ascertained that in Fairbanks alone, the city and state enforcement people will save $50,000 a year. We are now considering the feasibility of using closed-circuit TV arraignment. See, the judge is in the courthouse. You don't have to transport the prisoner to the courthouse in both Anchorage and in Juneau. There are other measures that we are taking. We are using in rural Alaska. We're using computer-assisted research. I am not used to this. We instituted in Barrow instead of hardbacks. We are hard copy. We are using computers, Westlaw, Lexis, to assist in research. This has shown to be cheaper than the conventional library. There's been a remarkable development in Anchorage, and I'm proud of all levels of the court system and how we are consistently demonstrating flexibility. My colleagues over there are sitting as trial judges, and I have sat as trial judge. Helping out to meet the caseload increase. The Court of Appeals has also agreed, I never assign a judge unless they agree, to sit as trial judges to help out. Judge Singleton just came back from a long stint in Kenai. Similarly, our district court judges have shown great willingness to cooperate. They have taken assignments at the Superior Court level. Representative Grunberg knows this, to help out in Anchorage in the family court matters, children disputes. And it's really a feeling, and you get a sense of the bureaucracy willing to be flexible, willing to meet these challenges. Now, recently, earlier this week, I was out in Bethel as a member of the Judicial Council, where we were selecting and sending names to the governor under our appointment system for the position of Chris Cook. He's a retiring Superior Court judge. And I think that one thing you must consider in your deliberations as to allocation of resources is to reaffirm both the legislature's and the court system's commitment to rural Alaska. Looking back when I started, the changes are so dramatic in the Bethel area in terms of a facility, a resident Superior Court judge, 19 lawyers in the community, and whatever you think of the legal profession, it has brought about a dramatic change in rural Alaska's access to the justice system. And I think it's imperative that we continue and nurture our efforts in rural Alaska to give all Alaskans access to our system of justice. Now, on a positive level, I can report that the Supreme Court of Alaska, besides our willingness to serve as trial judges, has once again, for the third straight year, shortened the disposition time. And practicing attorneys and litigants will welcome this. It takes, when a case is submitted to us, to the time we reach a final decision. Similarly, the Court of Appeals has also truncated its disposition time on matters submitted to this. And I've already reported to you that despite this burgeoning caseload, both on the civil and criminal side, in district and superior courts, the courts, for the most part, have made remarkable progress in the disposition rates. And this is in face of, and I think recently a public defender testified before you people, this is in face of a 60% increase in jury trials in Anchorage alone. The PD testified, I believe, before this body, that in the last year they've experienced a 36% increase in their caseload. So what I want to convey to you is that I think we have the flexibility, I think we have the goodwill, and we have a record, past record, of honest budgets, and that we have demonstrated and will continue to demonstrate receptivity to new and innovative means of approaching litigation. And this has been dramatically demonstrated in Anchorage through, I think, mostly the impetus of our presiding judge, Douglas Cerdaley. We have instituted a fast-track system. The common complaint you hear, one of the common complaints about our system, is that it's too complex, too slow, too costly. The fast-track system is designed to take 60% or more of the pending civil cases that we get annually in the Anchorage area and give these cases simplified, expedited treatment so that the litigants will receive, get their cases adjudicated more rapidly and with less expense. This is one of the very, very innovative things that the Supreme Court approved of, and it's actually in place and being tried in Anchorage, which again, and I told you this last year, is our heavy caseload area. One other thing that I'd like to touch upon before going back to a little history, and that is the workings of the Alaska Judicial Council. I'm sure that Fran Brentson is here. One of the more controversial things that you asked the council to study was the grand jury and the grand jury's investigative and reporting powers. Now, the council did give you the copies of a preliminary report. We've received word informally, but I understand that a written communication is forthcoming, that the Senate does not want recommendations. Well, speaking for myself, I can advise you, one, that the council will make discrete recommendations as to improvement in the grand jury's procedures. And two, I, as Chief Justice, am going to submit these recommendations to my colleagues for their consideration, and eventually, if they approve, to the advisory committees, both civil and criminal, our advisory rules committees, for their consideration and adoption. Because I am persuaded, after studying the council's report, that there are indeed areas of pathology, there are areas that must be improved in both the grand jury's charging function and the grand jury's investigative and reporting function. Now, I know it's disappointed, some of you, that the council did not sit as an appellate tribunal and pass judgment on the actions of the executive in the handling of the grand jury proceedings that involved the governor. That was not the function of the council, and if there was a misunderstanding, I apologize for it. I was responsible for insisting that the council not take on the role of an appellate tribunal and pass any judgments. These are neutral recommendations that are going to be made by the Judicial Council. Another study that the Judicial Council has made is that of presumptive sentencing. And when I was out in Bethel, I made a statement. We had a marvelous public meeting. And you really get a sense of what rural Alaska feels for the court system, all its wins, its warts, its flaws. But one thing that came through is that they want a court system. They appreciate the efforts that you people have enabled us to make in rural Alaska. But presumptive sentencing came up, and the council study will be out on presumptive sentencing. And remarkably, to me at least, the council's conclusion of the study is that presumptive sentencings have not led to longer sentences, and that presumptive sentencing has not increased the number or the percentage of criminal cases that go to trial. The filings have increased, but the percentage is exactly the same. And as for length of sentence, except for reclassification factor, most sentences are about the same length under presumptive sentencing as prior to the institution of this regime of presumptive sentencing. I personally, you know, I'm astounded that that's the result, but I think you'll have to study it for your deliberations. We'll have to study it. But I think it's interesting that the council did this. The council also studied this closed-circuit TV arraignment and came up with its conclusion that $50,000 can be saved just in one location alone. Not court system saving, but savings to two agencies, the local police agency and the state agency. The council is also monitoring, and the Peel trial and McKay-related trials dramatically illustrate this, the change that we've made in our media plan. No longer can a defendant have a veto and block media coverage of his or her trial, criminal trial, unless for some, you know, small area of crimes, like sex crimes, etc., where there's young victims or the victim objects. But this is an interesting development. We're going to continue to study it, and the council will monitor it for an additional year and then report back. You'll have the council's report, and you'll have our report. So in general, if I could sum up, I don't know where the line is, where you're going to have to allocate the resources. It's a you have terribly difficult issues, and I'm delighted to be where I am. I would not want to be in the boat of having to allocate shrinking revenues. Subsistence is a monumental issue, the whole issue of tort reform, although you might not have much to do with it. Tribal sovereignty is another. These are great themes that are presently, you know, occupying our time and our thoughts in Alaska. But I want you, when you do make your final budget considerations, to remember that although we only have a $38 million budget and we only have 600 employees and we have very few judges and we only occupy 1.7% of the operating budget, that we are a third branch of government, and that when all the dust settles, what do we want out of this whole exercise in government? You want a judicial system that people have access to, a judicial system that's fair, a judicial system that disposes of its cases with dispatch. You cannot, or I plead with you, do not cut us below an operating level where we can give this type of service that is constitutionally demanded to the citizens of Alaska. I want to thank you for the support that you've given us in the past and assure you, and I've probably forgotten some of the innovative things that we're doing, that we indeed will continue to strive to give Alaska a system, a judicial system, that meets not only the real needs, constitutional needs, the pragmatic needs of the citizens of Alaska. And before I conclude, I would like to introduce my colleagues who really, without complaint, are accepting extraordinary burdens besides sitting as trial judges. They've been showered with administrative decisions. We're going through this massive restudy of our civil rules, criminal rules, jury instructions on both the civil and criminal side, and children's rules. And why are we doing this? To make it simple, more comprehensible, and less expensive to the litigants in this state. And they are up to their eyeballs in this undertaking. I'll go in seniority first. The Honorable Edmund Burke is the last gentleman there. Justice Warren Matthews. Justice Alan Compton. And we're delighted he didn't make the federal bench, Justice Daniel Moore. In conclusion, I want to thank you for inviting us. I know that this has a certain structure, but I think it's important that we show our face. We tell you our hopes, our aspirations, what we're doing. A more detailed report is in our annual report, or State of Judiciary annual report, and that we continue this dialogue, this spirit of cooperation, and this joint undertaking, this marvelous experiment in democracy. And in a year from this coming September, we're going to celebrate the 200th anniversary, the bicentennial, of the Philadelphia signing of our Constitution. And this marvelous experiment in federalism must go forward. I think we have a distinguished society in Alaska in terms of its fairness to its citizens. Let's keep it so, and with your hope and your understanding, I think you'll let us operate, I hope you'll let us operate as the judiciary should in this jurisdiction. Thank you.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent the joint session stand and adjourn.
Without objection, the joint session is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Will the House come back to order? Before the recess, we had the bill on the board before us with amendment number one, which had been moved, and amendment number one is under debate. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the amendment. Mr. Speaker, this body has spent a considerable amount of time putting into statute the provisions of a competitive bid provisions. Mr. Speaker, we now have an opportunity to practice what we preach. This bill is perhaps one of the first times that this body has had to look at competitive bidding. And lo and behold, we take steps to eliminate it. I surmise, Mr. Speaker, that competitive bidding is not only for the private sector, but the public sector, again, should practice what it preaches, and we need to include in this legislation provision for competitive bidding. The last comment, Mr. Speaker, the representative from Fairbanks, in reviewing the statutes, acknowledged that in our competitive bid statute, there are other provisions to assure and protect the viability of an Alaskan concern. Those go to the requirements of a business license and the other requirements showing that that person is an active resident working and providing jobs within the state. I think that is a very important provision within the competitive bid statute. The elimination of Section B of this legislation, Mr. Speaker, goes to the heart and the spirit of this body's prior effort in supporting competitive bidding.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the amendment. As I read Section B, I see that we are saying that provisions of any other law relating to competitive bidding do not apply. That, Mr. Speaker, would mean any provision of any other law requiring competitive bidding. Mr. Speaker, I'd have no problem with a preference for bidders who were from the state, with some sort of a percentage preference being put into this bill. I do, however, have a very big problem with saying that none of the provisions of any law pertaining to or relating to competitive bidding will apply. I believe that that's a pretty blanket statement. I certainly don't feel comfortable making it, putting it into statute. I'd like to remind the body that on a day earlier this week, we were concerned about sending an open title to the other body. I would be concerned about sending such an open section to the other body. Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to the amendment and would ask my colleagues to please take a look at lines 14 and 15, where it clearly states that the only way a contract can be entered into by the commissioner is not only if the facility is available and able to perform the maintenance work that we need done, but then there's a crucial phrase in there, and that says that it has to be in the state's best interests. And it then lays out specific parameters for him to make that determination on, of what is in the state's best interest. And I sincerely hope that the people who've offered this amendment and support it aren't suggesting that we should do something that is not in the state's best interest. And apparently that's in essence what the comment is, and I have a hard time believing that, and so maybe I'm confusing what they've stated. There is a simple way, I might add, to resolve this entire problem. And we could do all of our own maintenance on all of our own vessels. All we need to do is tell DOT to build the facilities and tell DOT to hire the workers. And then you don't have to worry about whether or not you're going to have private enterprise operating these things. But we will be keeping the work in the state. I just don't think the tenor of the body is such that they wish to go out and hire a bunch more state workers at this point to repair these vessels. I think we want to see private enterprise develop and grow in this state. This is an Alaska hire bill, literally. And what it's saying is that we're going to support and utilize those facilities that we've already paid the groundwork to have put in, and that those enterprises, those private business enterprises that come on to our facilities will receive the work from our state ferries so long as it's in the state's best interest. And that would allow the commissioner to deny a contract where he felt gouging was occurring or that the price was not a fair price. So I definitely stand opposed to this amendment, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for your indulgence.
Ready for the question. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the debate has strayed a little bit from the intent of this amendment, and I still remain concerned about this Section B, and I really have a different concern that's been expressed. But if a facility down in Ketchikan, for example, is online and has subcontractors, if we adopt this amendment, the way I read it is that there's no guarantee that those subs have to be Alaska businesses or even have to have a business license or they have to maintain a business. So in Ketchikan, we could have subcontractors coming up from Seattle doing work in the facility, and I think we won't have any guarantee if we have this Section B in the bill. So that's why I'm going to support the amendment to delete it. Thank you.
Representative Penny Alberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from Fairbanks who just spoke is absolutely correct, and I think his reasoning alone is enough to defeat the amendment. But in addition, to support the amendment. But in addition, as written, the bill provides an operating subsidy to these facilities, and I would like to know if anyone was here when the capital request was made to help build those facilities. Was it argued at that time that the capital investment would be enough to get the project started so they would be able to make it on their own? Or was it argued that, well, we'll get it built and then we'll come back and ask you for an operating subsidy? I don't believe that any of the capital investments that that I have seen built in this state of this type have ever envisioned that we'd have to come back and provide them with the operating subsidy as well. Mr. Speaker, I think I probably have more confidence in the operators of those facilities than the people who are arguing for this subsidy. I'm pretty confident that given the fact that the ferry would have to spend $50,000 to run from Alaska down to the nearest U.S. port for maintenance or repair, that is enough of an advantage, plus the fact that the recovery costs for the investment are either lower or non-existent here. They don't have to worry about recovering their initial capitalization. That is probably enough of an incentive and enough of an advantage for them so that this would be meaningless anyway, and I would urge support of the amendment.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from Ketchikan called our attention to line 14, and I would like to call everybody's attention back to line 14 again. He was talking about the fact that there are some safeguards in this bill that make B okay. However, he said that what we have in the bill says that the commissioner would have to determine that there's no facility in the state able and available to perform the maintenance. Those were his words. However, the Finance Committee substitute suddenly says able or available. That was a change made in finance. That takes some of that comfort away, at least for me. It's much easier to meet the able or available test than it is to meet the able and available test. I support the amendment.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like to speak in opposition to the amendment and make a couple of observations. First of all, I don't think the problem exists so much in subsection B as in the fact that there's no provision that what is section B allows could be done in a vacuum and without public notice, public scrutiny. For that matter, Mr. Speaker, I just ask your indulgence to call attention to the fact that I've prepared an amendment number 3, along with my colleague from Ketchikan, that would say that when under section B, a commissioner makes a determination, he's got to set out, or she has to set out in writing, exactly what the findings are, the document that the amount of money in the state has granted, granted to or otherwise invested in marine vessel maintenance was considered, and how it was considered, and that the amortization, overhead, and startup costs of the facilities of the state have been considered, and the direct and indirect benefits would have to be documented. And then it's all out there in black and white. And of course, if the first time the commissioner does that and it's in black and white and it doesn't add up and it shows that it was a poorly made decision, I think that commissioner is in some deep trouble from the people of the state, considering the magnitude of the contracts that we're talking about here. I think that the important thing is not the details of B, but the fact that we just demand accountability, and the amendment that I'm proposing would do that. Now I want to now get to the business of the percentage. Right now on the books we've got a 5% advantage for the state. It's been proposed that we might soon have a 10% advantage, and that's not all that bad. But let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, the people of Seattle, and bless them, I'm glad they've been there. I certainly didn't want to go any further away than that. But the people of Seattle have literally, and I mean literally, made millions, tens of millions,
off our ferry system. And again, I'm not begrudging them a dollar of it. They were available, and we didn't have anything in the state to take their place. So I'm just delighted that we could stay at least that close. And we are friends with those people down there. But they've got, over the years, they've gotten used to making tens and hundreds of millions off the maintenance of our ferries. And I don't know. I can just see a scenario where they might be willing to take a loss leader for a year or two to ensure that the maintenance facilities at Ketchikan and at Seward don't survive, and that their virtual monopoly, their virtual lock on this basic business continues. And I'm not even saying that in a derogatory way. Lots of people in business, for lots of good, valid reasons, take loss leaders. And even at 10%, I can see, I can see a decision being made someplace in the lower 48 that, hey, we'd better go way under budget this year because we don't want those Alaskans to get in the habit of working on Alaskan boats in the wintertime at the exclusion of our workers. And, of course, they're looking out for their workers. There's just no question about it. We're talking about hundreds of jobs and millions of dollars. And I think it is valid for us to at least give this a try. And the first time somebody abuses it, then I think maybe we have to go back and roll up our sleeves and say, we can't allow that abuse to continue. Or at the very least, we have to say to that commissioner, sayonara. But I think, I just don't think, for instance, that the 10% is a guarantee that the Alaskans are going to get the bid. But I am satisfied that even if it was 15% or 20%, you could justify it on the basis of the payroll in the state of Alaska, the dollars that will roll into Alaska instead of the state of Washington, the fact that Alaskans will spend their winters in Alaska, some of our ferry workers, in fact, have homes in Seattle. Perhaps they'll even be tempted to relocate their homes to Alaska. Seems like an outrageous thing to suggest for a person that works on the state ferries, but I think it's something we can all concur with in here. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to see this given a try. If it doesn't work, then we go back to the drawing board. But I think absent this amendment, we've got a real problem of being underbid by, let's say, 10.0004%.
Representative Barton, state your point of order.
Mr. Speaker, I want to wait deliberately to be friendly about this rather than be objective too soon, but I hope that we will not have other members, since we have at least five more amendments, address their major amendment in lieu of the one that's before us now. Thank you.
Representative Martin, your point of order is well taken. We were under debate of amendment number one and then discussed an amendment that wasn't before us, but the speaker did pull back to the amendment number one.
If I could further expand on what you just said.
Representative Miller.
I did not present my amendment as an amendment to the amendment, which I could have just as easily and been well within the rules. In addition to that, it is valid to discuss an upcoming amendment if it bears on the amendment that you're discussing. And the amendment that I discussed does bear on the amendment we're discussing.
All five can do that. Representative Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, that, not on the question of whether the subject is the correct one. One comment was made by the previous speaker was that this amendment or this question does not occur in a vacuum. There are some written findings that may be required in a future amendment. There are some best interest suggestions named in the bill in lines 17 through 23. But I would submit that in lines 24 through 27, in fact, we are having these decisions made in a vacuum, even with the protections that are named above. Section 24 goes far beyond what is named in 1, 2, and 3 above, or questions of state interest. There are all kinds of laws, more than 3705-230, regarding to competitive bidding. There are antitrust laws. There are laws regarding what is proper business practice and what isn't. Whether it is, I am sure that it was inadvertent, but the language that was added in this section B goes far beyond what was intended, and it really does open up a tremendous amount of leeway in the procedures of the state in how they go about doing business, and it is far too broad.
Representative Boucher, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just for a moment like to briefly build on the window of opportunity that my distinguished colleague from Southeastern talked about. We are a maritime state. In fact, we are the maritime state. We do not have or haven't attempted to have or develop within this state, although we talk about the circular route, Pacific Rim, we haven't really made an aggressive attempt to build maritime opportunities within the state. Other places such as Tacoma, Seattle, have built their entire economy, just as Anchorage was built and the rail belt was built around the Alaska Railroad that has since disappeared into the infrastructure, although it's still a dominant part. I think that we do have ports here that tankers come in and out of, but no place in this maritime state do we have the capability of repairing anything, I believe, beyond the size of a destroyer? And I think as we talk about savings and economizing or what have you, and diversifying, I hear that often, we need to take a look at our opportunities. And I think beyond the resources that we harvest from the sea, there are some opportunities here. And I believe that both Seward and Ketchikan are ideally suited for them. So I guess what I'm saying is take a look at the larger picture. Let's not be like the chicken farmer who spends half of his time separating the gray from the white instead of counting the eggs and selling them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we have brief at ease?
The House please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Yeah, we still have before us Amendment Number 1 under debate. Are you ready for the question on Amendment Number 1? The question is, shall Amendment Number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Larson from yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
12 yeas, 19 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed adoption. Would the clerk please make reference to Amendment Number 2?
Amendment Number 2 by Furness, and it starts page 1, line 14, and it is on each member's desk.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection. Proceed, Representative.
Surprise me, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if I could give this amendment a name, I would call it an anti-blank check amendment. Mr. Speaker, what we've done in this legislation, we've taken away any acknowledgement of the competitive bid statute. Mr. Speaker, every contract in this state is aware of a process called bid shopping. And bid shopping, Mr. Speaker, is where a bid is let and the department in this instance is not required to accept the lowest bid. They can simply go to their favorite vendor and say, we like your work, regardless of your price, let's negotiate. Mr. Speaker, the language on line 14 gives that department an ability to go shop the bid. But I don't think that's right, Mr. Speaker. We say here at a price that is in the best interest of the state. The representative from Juneau a minute ago, Mr. Speaker, mentioned guarantee. One of the best guarantees that we can have in order to assure that this work is done in the state of Alaska is to adhere to the competitive bid statutes that we have worked so hard to put on the books. The second guarantee, Mr. Speaker, we can use to assure that the work stays in the state of Alaska is to do away with the ability of simply shopping the bid. And this amendment, with this passage, will accomplish that.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote?
I don't know what's happening. I hope it doesn't.
Please, just overload it with reds. Has any member failed to vote? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Davis.
Yes. No to yes.
From no to yes. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please take the roll?
15 yeas, 18 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption.
It didn't come through, Mr. Speaker. I think they may have to vote again. I have no record.
The clerk has just informed me that the vote did not compute, so there is no tally sheet. We'll try the vote again on the whole question. The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote?
No.
The clerk locked the roll.
I don't think it's going to work.
Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
17 yeas, 18 nays. Didn't come through. Is it on over there? Is the machine on? They're all right.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we have a brief at ease?
The House, please stand at ease.
I've never had anything.
Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, amendment number 2 had failed adoption. Would the clerk please make reference to the amendment number 3 before us?
Amendment number 3 by M.M. Miller and Taylor to page 1, line 16, and it is on each desk.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Hearing objections. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, all this says is that whatever decision that the commissioner makes, he's got to document it in writing, so it'll be on the public record.
Are the objections maintained? Are objections maintained to amendment number 3? Representative Furness.
Objection, Mr. Speaker, simply for a comment. I'm going to support the amendment, but Mr. Speaker, this is after the fact. For the most cases, as a legislative body, we will no doubt not be around to scrutinize it. So what? The commissioner go ahead and shop a bid, makes a determination to go with the person who is not a competitive bidder nor the lowest bidder, and he writes his findings. But Jesus Christ, let's give him talent enough to know how to write a memorandum. The amendment, I'll support it, but it really doesn't do anything. It's after the fact.
Representative Furness, I appreciate your involvement in this piece of legislation, but please try to watch the language which you use to express that.
Mr. Speaker, I will apologize to the body. I'm afraid I did get a little emotional there. But this is a very serious piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Are objections maintained to amendment number 3? Hearing no objections, amendment number 3 has been approved. Representative Gruenberg.
May we have a brief at ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come to order? We have amendment number 3 before us. Okay. Okay. We just disposed of amendment number 3. Would the clerk please make reference to amendment number 4?
Amendment number 4 by Pinal Berry to page 1, line 12, and it is on each desk.
Representative Pinal Berry.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of the amendment.
Hearing objections. Does the Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very much in favor of this amendment, inasmuch as DOT, in their budget and everything, is maintenance, repair, and replacement. However, I would like to make a friendly amendment to the amendment that the amendment also be added on line 25 of the bill.
We have an amendment to the amendment. Is the clerk able to, or amendment?
Page 1, line 25,
okay.
The same amendment.
Are there any objections to that amendment, to the amendment? Representative Miller? Okay, would the House please stand at ease? Would the House please come back to order? I almost said, would the court come back to order? Okay, before the at ease, we had an amendment to the amendment. Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment number 4 by Pinal Berry, as amended, page 1, lines 12 and 25. After the word maintenance, add new words or repair.
Okay. Now, does that include Representative Cato's amendment? Okay. Are there any objections to amendment number 4? Representative Martin.
Advised mainly for information. I'm wondering if these facilities, I know they were built for maintenance and normal minor stuff that need to be done on a ship or a vessel, but do we have the facilities now that can do the repairs? And I was wondering if we're extending this even further when we come in line to the subsection that was defeated before, number B, which had included to it the repair section. And have we now even extend ourselves even further where it's going to be impossible to comply with the laws because our facilities cannot repair the ships if they're damaged or if the bow is damaged or whatever happens? Do we have the facilities to do it?
Representative Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As far as repairing the vessels, I feel quite confident that the facilities would have the ability to repair. Severe extreme damage such as the minority leader just said might possibly cause those vessels to be taken somewhere else. However, that would be in the judgment then of awarding the bid to the facility. I definitely believe that where work is, people will come, parts will come, and that the repair very definitely can be done in those facilities.
Are objections maintained to amendment number 4? Hearing no objections, amendment number 4 has been adopted. Representative Gruenberg, would the House please stand at ease?